You are tuned in to the What's Happening Salem podcast, presented by Advantage Heating and Electrical, changing the contracting world with love, empathy, and kindness, and a lot of hard work. We appreciate you being here, Salem. What's happening, Salem? And we are back. The What's Happening Salem podcast. Today, I am joined by Salem Police Chief Trevor Womack. Our co-host Brandon is out today. He's out of town. Thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, absolutely. I've heard you speak a few times, a few different events. When I was at the Chamber of Commerce, I worked there for a year, so I would be at a few events where you were gracious enough to make time to speak to the group. But I'm excited to just have a conversation with you today. I think there's a lot of myths about what's happening in Salem, and this could be a chance to, you know, kind of get some a different perspective, a more educated perspective than what we generally see on Facebook. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here.
Of course. Thank you.
And first, though, I'm just curious to hear, as a Salem transplant, I always love hearing, what was your first impression of Salem and how has that evolved now that you've been here for about 3 years, correct?
It's been 4 years now. Yeah. I started right at the end of 2020. First impressions were great. I love this community. I love the location. I mean, just between the coast and the mountains and also the riverfront park that we have and just the vibrant downtown and the people were so welcoming, right? So it was a really pleasant, positive experience being a transplant, as you say, moving up from California.
What were some of the things that you noticed were highlights when you got to Salem, that you've been a citizen? Like, what are some of your favorite things about Salem?
Like I said, just the location too. I love the fact that you can just drive an hour, maybe an hour, 15 minutes, get to the coast. I love the Oregon coast. And then also the mountains. I like to go fishing and the lakes that are available. Going up through Sisters and Detroit Lake, it's just beautiful up there. And then here, like coming downtown and having a good restaurant scene, some nice restaurants and some people walking around downtown and enjoying it. It's not the way it was that the community I came from necessarily. So I really enjoyed the downtown vibe that we have here in Salem.
I love that. And are you able to just be out in public? Do you get recognized all the time? Or
you know, that's been one of the strangest things. I was a deputy chief for 8 years in my prior agency, which is the number two position, right? And it wasn't the same experience, but coming up here, I had to get used to it because you start to get recognized in places. And there's so many people that obviously know who you are as the chief, but I can't remember their name or I've never met him before. And so sometimes it feels a little awkward, but I've kind of settled into that now. And it's almost this weird feeling of a little bit of celebrity status. And I don't mean that in a, you know, arrogant way, but being recognized all the time is not something I was used to. But now I also realize kind of the value of that, right? The voice that I have in that position. And so I'm more comfortable in that position now.
And so coming to Salem, you know, 4 years ago, what were some of the things that were happening with crime in Salem and with the police department that maybe were going well? And then I know you recently just completed a 3-year strategic initiative. So I'd love to hear on just about what that plan was and how progress has been.
Sure. I think in the beginning, you said when I first arrived, boy, I tell you what, I jumped into quite a bit that was going on. This was December 2020. There was a pandemic. We're in the heat of a pandemic. Even it's a funny story there. I took over as chief of police and everybody was working from home and remotely. And so I'm trying to transition into a brand new organization and I don't know anybody and everything was remote and virtual. In fact, the city even didn't want me to come into the office, right? I was supposed to be the chief from home, which didn't work for me. So that pandemic environment we were going through, but then all the protests that were happening, this is also post George Floyd. There was so much pressure and attention and criticism of law enforcement at the time. And here, what was a little different for me here in Salem, being the capital city, is there was this convergence of two sides coming together in protests, right? So it wasn't just a one-sided protest. It was two sides clashing together. And somehow our officers were supposed to get in the middle of that and protect everyone from themselves, kind of. And so it was a very challenging environment. It was only, I believe, my 10th day on the job when there was folks, you know, breaking into the Capitol building. And so I did question for a moment there, you know, what did I get myself into? Because there was just so much going on at the time. It was a bit overwhelming. But so things have changed a lot since then, right? Things have settled down so much and we've made so much progress. But that was what I stepped into on day one.
And you, at that point, you had everybody was just mad at every police officer.
Yes.
Because there was one side that was mad because the mask mandates. And so they were furious about the police for enforcing those. The other side was angry about the like, a lot of the social causes. And like George Floyd, you had mentioned a few other situations similar to that. And I felt like it was interesting to be in Salem because I felt like generally our police department had pretty good relationships.
Yes.
But there was this larger conversation that was happening and really everybody was just anger. And you had the police department in the middle of all of it. And at the same time, trying to keep the peace in the community.
Exactly right. And there was protest after protest after protest for a long time. And like you said, we really couldn't win. You know, after one protest, there'd be a certain group saying that we're heroes and the other side would be mad at us. And the next protest, it would be the exact opposite. It just depended on how the protest played out. And we really couldn't win in any situation. It was very challenging.
So I'm curious just to hear the leadership in this sort of an environment, because there were so many new scenarios. You talked about like working from home, but also just like extreme conflict and your team really being at the center of it. How did you approach it and what did you learn through that process?
For me, the leadership was really about bringing as much stability as I could in the middle of that chaos, right? And just reassuring the agency, the organization. And also, I was still getting to know everyone. I really didn't know the people within the organization. So I was meeting people both internally and externally, doing a lot of that for the first year just to get to know everyone, but trying to bring as much stability as I could to the organization and help us focus. We were being pulled in so many different directions, which kind of leads into that strategic plan discussion is, you know, how do you focus the organization on certain priorities when we have limited resources and we're being spread so thin and so many different demands upon us. And that brings some level of stability, right? And reassurance to people when we know, okay, these are our top priorities. This is what we need to focus on. So that was my primary approach, just getting to know everyone, building some trust within the organization and developing a roadmap through a strategic plan that got us all focused.
Awesome. So tell us about the strategic plan. I myself am not super familiar with it, so I'm excited to learn about it. But what was the plan and just how's progress been?
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited too. I got to admit, I'm a bit of a strategic plan geek, right? I really value strategic planning. And I think as the chief of police, if it's not my primary role, one of my primary roles is, you know, creating that strategic vision and that roadmap for the organization at a very high level. And for me, that translates into a strategic plan. So when I arrived, we spent about a year working on that together with a lot of community input, a lot of internal input to build our first 3-year strategic plan for the organization. And we settled on these priority areas of safety. I think that's just kind of obvious. That's a core function of law enforcement, both internal with our staff, but also with our community external. So safety. The next area was legitimacy, which really means trust, right? Trust building and relationship building, again, with the community and with ourselves in the organization. And then excellence, just this pursuit of just being as efficient and effective as we're constantly learning and moving ourselves forward. So these safety, trust, and excellence categories, and we had a lot of different objectives, initiatives that we built out under each one of those kind of buckets of work. But it got us focused on those ideas of safety, legitimacy, and excellence. You know, it took a little while, its first plan, and to get everybody to understand how that might work for us. But now we're in a spot where we've all gelled around those areas and we've made a lot of progress and we've got some momentum. So for me, it's exciting.
And a big topic in Salem right now is the budget. Huge deficit. So when you look at the budget and you think through it, what are the questions that you're asking and what are you hoping are some of the outcomes that we see as the city council and the city looks to find a resolution?
Yes, and I don't want to be too negative. I try to be optimistic and positive, but it is a pretty dire budget situation, and I have to speak to the reality of the situation. And it started, you know, I think right now it's coming to an head because it's such an acute problem, and people are so aware, especially with the payroll tax issue that came up. Everybody's much more aware right now, when in fact, this budget issue has been looming for a long time, even before I arrived. Back in 2018, the city council at the time was ready. They had an ordinance. They were ready to put a payroll tax initiative out to the voters in 2018. And then at the last minute, they pulled that as we went into the pandemic because the timing wasn't right. And so we were already facing this issue back in 2018. And then a lot of federal money came in, right, during the pandemic with the ARPA money. And it kind of floated the boat for a while. It floated the general fund. But that's one-time money. So now it dried up. And it immediately put us back into the deficit situation that we were back in 2018. So I just say that because it's not a new situation. It's been simmering for a long time. So what I'm hoping for is that we can find a pathway forward. I think that the city council is on the verge of passing an ordinance to take a levy out to the voters for livability, which would be Center 50 Plus, parks, library, those type of services that come from the general fund. And then we'll have to see. That would be in May, the vote, and we'll see if our community supports that or not. And that'll, you know, the yes or no on that will really define two different pathways forward. And so we're in a bit of a limbo state where we really need to find out if there's going to be more revenue and how much that will be. And then if there's not, how do we react to that? And if there's not, I think that's about priorities. At that point, there's if you don't have the revenue, you have to cut, right? You have to reduce costs. That's just the reality of the situation. So what are those cuts and what are the priorities for city services? Obviously, I'm the police chief. I'm biased. But for me, public safety is the type one of, if not the core service that city government provides. And it's a very high priority. And so I do worry about any impacts, especially if a levy doesn't pass.
When you think of a podcast in Salem, I love that we have a company with such an incredible legacy joining as our premier sponsor. Advantage Heating and Electrical has proudly been providing safety, comfort, and peace of mind to the greater Salem area for over 30 years. Through residential and commercial heating, air conditioning, and electrical service, they're just a call or text away. Reach out to them at 503-393-5315. One more time, that is 503-393-5315.
Every 3 minutes, a child enters foster care in the United States. At Casa Marin County, we believe every foster child deserves a safe and happy home. Your gift can make a life-changing difference for a child in foster care. Visit CasaMarianOR.org to donate today. That's CasaMarianOR.org.
Absolutely. I think nobody would say that safety is not important for the community. Like, we're all pretty aligned there. It's just a matter of how we get there. And I think another important just data point is, like, Salem's not the only city struggling with a budget problem right now. Like, Independence, $1 million deficit. Portland, I heard $100 million. Like, cities are struggling figuring out how to operate. And so I think just as communities, we just need to figure out how do we make this work for everybody. And to your point, just understand what are the priorities of the city going to be, and where do citizens need to come in and come up with creative solutions to solve some of the other gaps potentially.
That's right. And like you said, thank you for bringing that up. It really isn't just a City of Salem problem. And each city is experiencing it to different levels. And there's a reason for that. It's kind of easy to think that we just have a spending problem. If we just didn't spend so much money, it would go away. But there truly is this structural problem in Oregon. If you think of the state government, they have income tax revenue, right? And so income tax revenue kind of ebbs and flows much better with your economy, right? When your economy is booming, there's more income tax, vice versa. But we're relying on property tax at the city level, all cities, not just Salem. And because of measures 5 and 50 decades ago or years ago, it just capped us, right? And it was a snapshot in time, actually. So cities weren't captured at the same rate. So Eugene at the time, and Salem, Eugene had a higher tax rate at the time than Salem did, and it froze it at that rate. So we were already, less revenue than Eugene received, and then it capped it at a 3% growth. And our CFO can explain this much better than I do, but just at the basic level, if you think about 3% revenue growth with everything we've been through with inflation and costs increasing, personnel costs increasing, it's very hard to keep your spending or your costs at a 3% growth rate. So it presents this structural problem. And I've been telling the story for 4 years that for the department, what that means is our budget is bigger. I hear that a lot. When you look, of course, our budget's bigger. Costs have increased. So our budget's bigger, but the staffing has not. I've got the same number of budgeted police officers today that I did 17 years ago in 2008. And things have changed so much since 2008. What that forces you to do as a leader, again, not just 4 years since I've been here, but for a while now. It's the story of death by 1,000 cuts. And I probably use that analogy too much, but that's what comes to mind when I think of this, is each year you kind of have this zero sum budget where you're not allowed to add staffing while your population's growing and your service demands are changing. And so you have to retract from other services to make sure you provide your core services like patrol, emergency response. The most recent example is I had to pull back our downtown bicycle team just to make sure we have enough officers on patrol to handle 911 calls. And that's that story that's been going on for a long time. And sometimes the community, I think, isn't really aware of that because some of those cuts seem a little small, like they might not have felt them or seen them, but they were impactful. And the folks who do understand it very well are the staff within the organization who are just taking on that extra work and doing more while the service demands are changing on us. So it's a big, complex problem, but it's definitely not new. And we've just reached this critical point, I think, where there's not much else I can see for 4 years now that we can kind of pull back on or reduce a service without a pretty significant public safety impact. And that makes me nervous.
Yeah, it's good for people to hear this message as they're deciding, which way they're going to vote. how they're communicating with people about the importance of this levy, but even just getting out and taking the step of voting and being involved in our community at that level is just kind of like an entry point. Like, if nothing else, like, just do this, let your voice be heard. I think it's so important.
That's what I've been saying, is just engage, just become generally aware of what the problem is, and just be engaged so your voice is heard one way or the other. All of our budget committee meetings, our city council meetings, of course, are public meetings. You can either attend them in person or you can just watch them online, live or after the fact. And these discussions are happening. So as a citizen, as a community member, just try to engage and make sure your voice is heard and you can make an informed decision on any sort of revenue measure.
How is staffing at the police department right now? I know in the past there have been, you know, many open positions that you're trying to fill. And I know just in general, hiring has been a struggle for a lot of businesses, you know, in Salem. I'm curious to hear how it's going with the police department.
Yeah. And that gets, first of all, let me say that under excellence in our strategic plan, there was a whole, you know, we knew that we needed to fill our ranks. We wanted to diversify a bit. We wanted to bring local folks for, like, kind of grow your own cops, right, from this region into the organization. And we just made huge strides on that. So I'm really proud of that. I mean, we've been hiring over 20 police officers a year for 3 years now, which is record level hiring for our agency. And so in one sense, people say we have a hiring challenge, but if you're hiring at a record level, then it's much more of a retention challenge than it is a hiring challenge, if you think about it that way. So I'm really proud of the fact that through the pandemic, through the social justice causes and the pressure that we were under and the criticism, that we were able to hire that many new officers into our organization. Very proud of that. And it was a national issue. You said business community. I think every employer feels this now, but specifically with the police, because of the issues I just talked about, what we saw happen across the country, and we felt it here too in Salem, was people exiting the profession at a high rate, more than my 33-year career that I've ever seen. So if you could retire, you did, right? And you didn't stay any longer. You just, as soon as you could retire, you left. And then what was different for me, the first time I had ever seen this, was people that were senior tenured officers, maybe 7, 8, 9 years on the job, just said, you know what, this job's not for me anymore. This career's not for me. And they would just quit. And I'd never seen that before in my career. That's the kind of pressure that we were under. So that attrition kind of exploded on us. Well, at the same time, you know, who wanted to be a police officer? I mean, the interest in the career really dropped. We would routinely have recruitments where we would get 300 to 400 applications at a time, and it dropped to 30. We were getting 30 applications. And with the standards that we have and the background they have to go through, sometimes we might only hire one person or zero out of that group, right? So those combining factors of exploding attrition with decreased career interest put us in a hole very fast. And you mentioned it. So at our worst point, a couple years ago, we had 26 police officer vacancies. So we're authorized 196. And if you have 26 vacancies, it's just too high of a vacancy rate and it affects you operationally so badly. So more reliance on overtime. Your staff's getting more burned out. They're carrying on that extra work. The work doesn't go away. And so we're proud of the fact that we've had that record hiring rate, because we're just slowly crawling out of that hole, right? As the attrition has slowed, interest is starting to go back up, hiring 20 plus officers a year. Now we're down to 12 vacancies today. And, you know, it just bounces around. Sometimes it does feel a little bit like two steps forward, one step back, but, or vice versa. but we're making progress. And so I do think that we're on the right path now. We're kind of coming out of that hole. And that presents challenges and opportunities too, right? But very, very, very proud of that work and very proud of the people that chose to come into this profession during that time. It's just great, great people.
What is a myth about crime in Salem that you hear often but is just entirely untrue?
I think these are difficult conversations because everybody has different public safety concerns and issues, right? If you're a business owner downtown, maybe your primary concern are some of the livability issues that you're experiencing with folks, unsheltered population, and maybe things that are happening in front of your business, or an occasional broken window, which is not cheap, right? I mean, things like that, which in the grand scheme of things are quote unquote kind of lower level crimes, right? They're not crimes at all sometimes. But for as a business owner, that might be your top public safety priority. And so there's issues sometimes on how do we solve those things? How do we address, how do we respond to it? When at the same time, what the facts show, what the data shows, is that violent crime in Salem has been just slowly trending up for 10 years, right? There's this long-term trend line. While certain crimes have been going down or staying flat, that violent crime, which is the terrible stuff, the armed robberies, the murders, the sexual assaults, those have been trending up for 10 years. And so as an agency, we're trying to focus on that and turn that trend line down. And it comes at the expense too often of some of those other things that people really care about. And so I do try to always point to data to just focus everybody on the facts, but understand the passion and the real experiences people are having also. And sometimes that's frustrating for me and our organization because we can't provide the level of public safety services that the community is demanding and that we want to provide. We're just kind of strapped for resources and being pulled more and more into some of those really heavy public safety problems that I'm talking about.
And I think that is one of the challenges of the police department is you're kind of the last net. If nobody else catches it, I feel like it kind of falls in your team's hands. And
that's right.
I'm not sure if you would agree with that or not.
I do.
But you can't be trained for every single thing that happens in Salem that's a negative thing. And picking up litter, you know, if there's like a mess, I see cops doing that sometimes. And it's just like so many different things seem to fall into this job description.
That's right. And then you end up being, truly 99% of the time, our officers and our staff are just doing excellent work out there. I mean, nobody ever hears about it because when you have good outcomes, people don't really hear about it. But then occasionally, of course, we use force, right? There's force incidents and occasionally it's deadly force or it's a little bit more high profile and everybody hears about it. And if there's anything that we could have done better in that situation with that split second decision, then there's a lot of intense pressure and criticism. And so that's just part of the job. We understand that. But people tend to hear more about those larger scale negative outcomes rather than just the constant day-to-day work that's being resolved so well and professionally. So yeah, I think, and sometimes that's, let's say if we have a use of force incident and it involves somebody that's in emotional crisis, right? They have behavioral health issues, for example, and it turns into a deadly use of force. And rightly so, we will be closely scrutinized for that, right? Was it legally justified? Was it within policies? Could we have done anything better? But at the same time, like you said, that is at the end of a long story. And that they didn't just fall into behavioral health crisis yesterday. I mean, for years, that family and that individual has been dealing with issues and experiencing a system that's just let them down. Right? I'm not pointing blame, but what sort of resources did they ever find to where they ended up in such a crisis state that it turns into a use of force situation with the police? We're just called in at the last minute to a crisis situation. So yes, we often are just coming at the last minute on these things that have been developing for years. But that's a job we signed up for, right? And we try to do that exceptionally well.
Another hot topic right now is ICE and the threat of being deported for a lot of our Hispanic communities, specifically sensitive to this topic. What's the reality? What's currently happening out there? What are you hearing? And how is the police department responding in Salem?
Sure thing. And you know, this isn't the first time fears like this have swelled right over the years. Sometimes in our immigrant community, these type of things happen, they get concerned. And so we've dealt with this before. But here in Oregon, very specifically, it's important also to say that, we don't do immigration enforcement at the local law enforcement level. There's laws actually in place. So not only do we follow federal laws, we of course follow and enforce state laws. And here in Oregon, we are barred from cooperating with ICE on immigration enforcement. And so even if I wanted to, I couldn't. Not that I want to, because I don't, but there are strong, strong guardrails here in Oregon to where we don't ask for folks' immigration status. We don't cooperate with ICE on their immigration efforts. In fact, Oregon requires us to report all that. And so even if a federal agency asks us to help with an immigration issue, we have to report that to the state. We submit annual reports. And so the reality is we've had zero requests from ICE for immigration enforcement recently. 4 years I've been here, I haven't had a single request, and we haven't had any recently either. So nothing's really changed for us in that sense, but we are dealing with the fallout or the trust issues and the concern that are coming because of the changes that are valid in a sense, right? I mean, people experiencing that, they don't understand what may or may not be happening. And so I put out a little bit of a public statement just for that, just to try to state the facts of the situation. And also that because of those strong guardrails, actually, people should still feel comfortable regardless of their immigration status. They should still feel comfortable interacting with us at the Salem Police Department. If you're a victim or a witness to a crime, we need to talk to you. And we're not going to ask you about your immigration status. And we want to solve crimes properly. We need victim and witness to help us with that. So that's the interest that I have. And I don't want to let this situation kind of damage the relationships that we worked on building for so many years. So just trying to be very factual about it, be open, as transparent as possible. But right now we've seen zero actual immigration enforcement that I'm aware of, and we've received no requests for assistance.
So a lot of it is just like national narrative, but we haven't really seen any changes locally. Because I'll get messages from people sometimes, and it's usually my friend's cousin said his dad saw, and it's like, hey, are you going to be reporting on this? I'm like, I don't know what you want me to report on this thing. It's like you're three, you know, people separated from. Like, there's nothing for me to really say about it. But there is like definitely this like sense of concern of people wanting to know when this is happening. But it's just, it does seem like right now it's a lot of concern about potential and not a reality that's happening currently.
And that false information is very, like you said, how do you report on it? Because first of all, is it even true? I mean, odds are here in Oregon, it's probably not true necessarily, or there's much more behind it. And so one example that comes to mind right now that happened just within the past couple of weeks here is there was a report circulating on social media that we had been, our officers had been overnight at Wallace Marine Park, just to stopping individuals and checking about their immigration status and cooperating with ICE. And just didn't happen at all, right? What really actually happened was we regularly get complaints of people doing reckless driving at the park overnight. They're spinning donuts, they're crashing. We've had shootings and stabbings there sometimes out of these gatherings. And so our officers went there and the park's closed. We're kind of clearing people out of the park and making them leave. That's what's actually going on. And it turns into somehow that we're doing immigration enforcement. So it's just that false narrative. It's also, there's fear in the community, but what that does for us, it's very distracting. Like now I have to spend time researching what happened and explaining to people who have questions what really happened there when it's just baseless. It's just not true. So our staff time is so valuable that sometimes this is a huge distraction for us to be battling these false narratives in the community as well. So I would just say, please don't spread stuff on social media if you know it's not true, or call and ask and find out the facts before you spread some message that sounds like it might be a little outrageous actually. Just try to stay focused on the facts.
How is being in the police force in Salem, Oregon different than Stockton, California, where you were before?
Yeah, the crime in Stockton was more intense. And I was raised in Stockton my whole life, right? And my father was a cop there too. So I knew at a young age what I wanted to do. And I spent almost 30 years there with the agency. So I knew that community so well. But it had a different sort of different level of crime, right? Definitely a different level of violent crime. So relatively speaking, right, coming from that city to this city seems much less, much safer. But if you live here, any violent crime is unacceptable, of course. And if it's increasing, that's just on the wrong trend line. But some of the biggest differences for me too, just coming from one state to the other, is just there's all different laws and everything too. And I had to get certified as a police officer in Oregon. So I had to go through some training and learn the laws. And so even that initial period where the pandemic's happening and all the protests and I'm trying to get to know everybody, I was also, you know, going through training and being certified and I'm trying to learn all the laws. And some of the differences I've noticed, just for example, Oregon tends to also codify their case law, if you know what that means. And so if there's a court decision on how we can interact with somebody on a traffic stop or whatever, the case law changes, and we have to follow that law too. The legislature here in Oregon oftentimes will take that case law and write a law and codify it. And what happens with that really is if the case law ever changes again, well, the old case law has now become legislative law and it kind of sticks. So that's just different. It was different than my experience in California. But the policing issues are kind of the same. I mean, honestly, the type of calls we go on and the issues, whether it was homelessness or some of the violent crime matters and downtown business community concerns, those are all very similar. That wasn't big of a change for me, actually.
And it does seem like in Salem, if you think of safety downtown, we're in a much better place than we were 3 years ago, right? Like, I feel like we've taken a lot of steps in the right direction. But I think when you see somebody struggling or in crisis, like, that's what captures your kind of perspective. And it's hard sometimes to zoom out. And I think the same thing is true just with crime in general or violent crime, where like compared to other parts of America, like Salem's a pretty safe place to live. But when you hear about this incident that's horrible, you just kind of ask yourself, like, why aren't we doing anything to fix crime? And the reality is we're never going to live in a society where there's just no crime. I'm not sure if it's possible. But I think that having that perspective is important. And for me, it's part of the reason why I really do appreciate Salem, because I think we do have a lot of good things. When you take time to zoom out and look at the progress of like downtown compared to like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. There was a time before you were here where Statesman Journal did a survey. They asked the people of Salem, who has the best appetizer in Salem? Applebee's won. It was Applebee's. We don't live in that Salem
nothing
any
against
longer.
Applebee's, right? But yeah.
And nothing is, I mean, the, you know, the classic combo appetizer thing that they have, it's mm-hmm. it's a great option, but we live in a, we have better options now. And I think we're prouder of our food than we were in the past. So we have good progress happening. And I think it's important to take a step back and appreciate that.
Yeah, and like I said, that's my first impression when I arrived too. It's just, you know, really nice. And I enjoy that.
So in your 4 years that you've been in Salem, what is a memory that you will take with you for the rest of your life?
First of all, just the intensity of things that were going on, transition, you know, coming to a new department was, frankly, just more overwhelming than I thought. So that's more on the negative side, really, just how intense that was to settle into a new organization. So now it feels nice to be so settled, actually, and just feel this is my department. I feel comfortable here. I know the community. So, but that was a challenge at first. But I think one of the best memories is just the people that I've gotten to know in the department. We've had so much change within the department. There's so many new people now too. Even my practically entire leadership team has changed too, not just the chief. So there's been a lot of leadership changes within the department. And so I think the best memory are going to be just the relationships I've dealt with people and how I've seen us move this organization forward, coming through some real challenging times, and the resilience of this staff. It's impressive. It's really impressive to see the work they do day in and day out when we're stretched pretty darn thin, highly efficient, highly effective, and they're just dedicated, competent people. So I know it's a little bit general, but that is my sense. My main takeaway is the relationships and the people within this organization. When you say Salem PD, it's the people, and we've just got some great dedicated people in the organization.
That's the answer of a true leader right there. It's always about the people. Like every business is a people business, regardless of if you're running a police station or a restaurant or an insurance agency. Like if you have that perspective of like, let's just make sure we take care of the people and trust the people are going to take care of the work. I feel like that's the mindset that's going to get you the best possible outcomes for your organization. So I love to hear that.
Exactly.
And you've been in Salem for the longest 4 years in human history, it feels like. Like so much has happened in these last 4 years. How do you feel like you've changed? Like, how are you a different person since you stepped foot in this incredible city that is the capital of Oregon?
Yeah, I think at a leadership perspective, you know, I did have to learn how to be a chief of police too, right? I mean, I was a deputy chief, which is, you're that operations deputy chief person, right, for a long time. And that means you're the one that really get stuff done. I mean, you are implementing and executing strategy, right? And so to settle into a role and realize that I can't do the work by myself and just rely on myself so much anymore. It's much more about, like you just said, developing the right team, surrounding yourself with the best people, creating more of a strategic vision, and that relationship building, constantly communicating. So just pulling myself, trying to get myself back from my tendency to want to get into the operations, right? I actually love that work. I like making things happen and getting things done. But now my role is completely different. Of course, I can't run the whole organization, one person. It's much more about putting the right people in place, make sure they're trained and prepared, that they know the direction and guidance that we're after, and that they're able to execute. And I'm just there to help them do that and support them as much as possible. And then that outward-facing piece, it's much more as the chief of police, much more direct interaction with elected leaders and community leaders about things like we're talking about, the budget and these type of things, where that's different too, right? And so I've really settled into that role now, embraced it, understand that is my role as a chief of police, and that's changed me over the past 4 years.
I love it. Well, we definitely do appreciate you being here, Chief Womack. Thank you so much. Also, here in Salem, I mean, but I also do appreciate you taking time for this podcast. I know you are extremely busy with your schedule, and you know, I look forward to hopefully connecting with you again at some point to hear updates. So thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we are now greeted by the incredible Shane Griggs. Shane, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Jacob.
We wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about Breakfast with the Chief and why it's important. And for those that are just completely unfamiliar, what is Breakfast with Chief and why should they care?
Let me just tell you a little bit about the foundation first. We are a nonprofit. Our mission is to garner community support for the police department and the work that they do. So every year we do just one fundraiser. It's a major one for us. It's the Breakfast with the Chief. And Typically, we identify a particular need that is not able to be funded through the city budget process. So, for example, last year we raised money to help buy the bomb truck. The year before, there was an effort to buy the ceramic shields that go into the bulletproof vests that truly made those vests bulletproof with this, you know, the higher powered rifles. This year, our focus is going to be on securing more drones and the accompanying equipment and pit bumpers for the cars. And those are used, you know, in high speed chases to stop a car. Every year, there's just that fundraiser for typically one or two items that we raise money for. And this year, it's February 13th, and the doors open at 7. We'll get you out of there by 8:30 because it starts at 7:30. But there's a good breakfast with excellent bacon, I might add.
Gotta have the bacon.
Yeah. And our current president of the foundation, Lori Harrelson, will be addressing what we've done in the past and a little bit more about what we're doing for this fundraiser. So, yeah, I will. The foundation started in 2010, so I'm not sure what actually was the impetus for that. But I know that every year there are things that are identified that the department needs that the city is unable to budget for. Just like with all the other state departments, our city is struggling to make ends meet, much less provide the equipment that they need to be safe.
And so for those that are interested in attending,
best way is to go online at Salem. I'll give you the website, Salem Police Foundation. That's all one word, .org. And there's information there about just reserving your space. There's not a cost to attend, although we truly hope that people are not going for free breakfast, but instead will contribute and help us raise the money that we need for this.
I love it. And we'll make sure we include that link in the show notes so you can check it out there. And Shane, we appreciate everything you're doing for the community and being involved. And for everybody listening, if you got value from this episode, be sure to share it with a friend. Leave us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice, and we'll see you next week on What's Happening in Salem.